chapter 12 of Matthew. At that time Jesus went on the Sabbath day through the corn, and his disciples were hungered and began to pluck the ears of corn and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto him, Behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful to do upon the Sabbath day. But he said unto them, Have you not read what David did when he was hungered, and they that were with him, how he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, neither for them which were with him, but only for the priests? Or have you not read in the law how that on the Sabbath day the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? But I say unto you that in this place is one greater than the temple. But if you had known what this means, I will have mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord also, or even on the Sabbath day. And when he was departed thence, he went into their synagogue. I like what he said, their synagogue. And behold, there was a man which had his hand withered, and they asked him, saying, Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days? That they might accuse him. And he said unto them, What man shall there be among you that shall have one sheep, and if it fall into the pit on a Sabbath day, will he not lay hold of it and lift it out? How much then is a man better than a sheep? Wherefore is it lawful to do well on the Sabbath days? Then saith he to the man, Stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it forth, and it was restored whole, like as the other. Then the Pharisees went out and held counsel against him, how they might destroy him. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all, and charged them that they should not make him known, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased. I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show judgment to the Gentiles. He shall not strive nor cry, neither shall any man hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed shall he not break, and smoking flax shall he not quench, till he send forth judgment to victory. And in his name shall the Gentiles trust. Then was brought unto him one possessed with a devil, blind and dumb, and he healed him, insomuch that the blind and the dumb both spake and saw. And all the people were amazed and said, Is not this the son of David? But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, This fellow does not cast out devils, but or except by the Beelzebub, the prince of devils. And Jesus knew their thoughts, and said unto them, Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself. How shall his kingdom stand? And if I, by Beelzebub, cast out devils, by whom do your children cast them out? Therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of God is come unto you. Or else how can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man, and then he will spoil his house? He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me scatters abroad. Wherefore I say unto you, all manner of sin and blasphemy shall be forgiven unto men, but the blasphemy against the Holy Ghost shall not be forgiven unto men. And whosoever speaks a word against the Son of Man, it shall be forgiven him. But whosoever shall speak against the Holy Ghost, it shall not be forgiven him, neither in this world, neither in the world to come. Either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Then certain of the scribes and the Pharisees answered, saying, Master, we would see a sign from you. But he answered and said unto them, An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, but there shall no sign be given to it but the sign of the prophet Jonas. For as Jonas was 3 days and 3 nights in the whale's belly, so shall the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth. And the men of Nineveh shall rise in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonas. And behold, a greater than Jonas is here. The queen of the south shall rise up in judgment with this generation and shall condemn it. For she came from the uttermost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And behold, a greater than Solomon is here. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walks through dry places seeking rest and finds none. Then he says, I will return into my house from whence I came out. And when he is come, he finds it empty, swept, and garnished. Then goeth he and takes with himself seven other spirits more wicked than himself. And they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Even so shall it be also to this wicked generation. While he yet talked to the people, behold, his mother and his brethren stood without, desiring to speak with him. Then one said unto him, Behold, thy mother and thy brethren stand without, desiring to speak with you. But he answered and said unto him that told him, Who is my mother, and who are my brethren? And he stretched forth his hand toward his disciples and said, Behold, my mother and my brethren. For whosoever shall do the will of my Father which is in heaven, the same is my brother and sister and mother. Back to the first verse. Now you see why there's no way I don't think I'd get through this tonight. Okay. At this time, or literally in this time, the word at is literally the Greek word in. In this time, or this setting, or this set time, Jesus went to the Sabbath. Okay, the word on should be to. He went to the Sabbath, and the word day shouldn't be there. He just went to the Sabbath. See, the Sabbath was something, it was a day, but it was also something that they celebrated. So you could see, just like Valentine's Day we just had, it was something they celebrated. And he was going to the celebration at the temple. Okay? And as he was going, he went through the what? What's it say there? It says corn, but literally it says the planted fields. The language literally says the planted fields. So he was walking through somebody's wheat field. And it says, while they were walking, what did they do? His disciples, or his students, his learners, okay, were hungry and began to pluck the ears of corn, or literally the heads off of the grain, and to eat. Now, here we go, and this is what religion is doing today, and we've got to look at in religion. Religion will tell you today, do and don't do, right? God's telling you very plainly here, you do what you got to do. Is that right? Law will tell you, you can't do this on Sunday. Okay? We used to have the old blue laws, I don't know if they're still in the books or not, where you couldn't buy anything on Sunday. I know some of you have to remember that, don't you? Remember the old blue laws? You couldn't do anything hardly on Sunday. You couldn't buy anything, could you? I mean, they just wouldn't permit you to do anything. When I was a kid, you couldn't hardly do anything on Sundays. Huh? Eat. There you go. That's probably right on the course, Larry. Yeah, there's some of them I'm sure still hold them on the books, but most places they don't anymore. But see, this is what religion is teaching us, and that's what he's saying. And now we get caught up in this thing. We get caught in this thing. See, what is the right thing to do? Jesus and his disciples was walking through a field, and they probably had a pretty good distance to go to get there, and they took a shortcut across the field so they wouldn't get there too late for the preacher. All right? They were trying to get there on time. And on their way, they said, hey, we haven't eaten. They didn't have a McDonald's, you know. They were hungry. And all they did was pick raw grain off the heads as they was walking by. They just stripped them off, probably, and began to chew the grain. They needed nourishment. And what happens to the religious folk? Oh, why are you doing something that's unlawful? Oh, you're supposed to die? See, that's what they think. See, that's legalism. It's law. And that's not what God is he? God is love, not law, right? So, as we understand that this law that he's exposing, this is not a bad thing, but there was a time for the law. But right now, while Jesus is walking, it's a time of transformation, okay? So you got to understand what he spoke in his mind and what he knew in his mind, sometimes he couldn't give us the fullness of it. He knew the end. He couldn't even tell us. He was a man born of a woman made under the what? Law. So So he was bound by the law to be the perfect sacrifice. And that's why he said, I have meat to eat that you know not of. Paul's going to bring it in later. But he'll bring the true sin that wasn't lawful to be revealed at that time, the changes. But Jesus began the changes because he said, look at the references he goes back to. But when the Pharisees saw it in verse 2, they said to him, behold, thy disciples do that which is not lawful in the Sabbath. In the Sabbath, you're not allowed to do anything. See, like the old blue laws. You can't do nothing. That's just legalism. And what did Jesus answer them and say? But he said unto them, have you not read what David did when he was hungry and they that were with him? How they entered into the house of God and did eat the what? Well, the showbread, boy, there's something wrong here. What is the showbread supposed to be? Now, what's everybody tell you? What kind of bread is it? That ain't unleavened bread. That word's artos. It's a raised loaf. Okay. There was 12 loaves placed in there and no place, but everybody teaches that's unleavened bread. There ain't no place in this book that says that's unleavened bread. But everybody teaches you that. It's unleavened bread, don't they? Look at your word. What is it, Lois? It's artos. 740, isn't it? In the Greek, huh? Verse 4. The showbread. See? That's what it is. See, and that's part of religion. The don't do. The do's and don't do's. And he said, David went in and eat this bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor neither for them that were with him, but only for the priests. David was a transformation from the law to grace in shadows and types. He was a type of Christ. Just as Jesus came, he was a transformation. He was transforming us from being under the law to going to grace under the new covenant. Understand that? Okay, so now in this transformation period, everything is not clear what's going on. If anybody ever went through a transformation in a job or somewhere you work, there's part of the old there and part of the new there, and there's a little confusion, and it takes a little while to get it settled out, doesn't it? God knows what we're like. I mean, God, He made us. He knows that we're thick-headed, stiff-necked, right? So He knew it's going to take a little while to get it through. So He's saying, look, David did it. Why do you think David did it? Why did David go eat that bread? Just because he was hungry? I think God set the example with David that, hey, when it comes time to eat, you got to eat or die. Right? So it doesn't make any difference what anything else is, what somebody's thinking about it. This is a time of change, and we've brought about a change where they're no longer the legalism that we've been under before. Right? So, and then he goes on and says, or have you not read how that on the Sabbath day, the priests in the temple, and this is in the literal temple, it's the word hieron, not the naos temple, which is spiritual, they profane or desecrate the Sabbath and are what? The word literally here is innocent. Okay. They done things that were wrong. They desecrated the temple, but yet they were held blameless. That's pretty amazing. How many of you have been told that if you did anything wrong in the temple, you would die right in your tracks? What's he say there? Who's telling the truth? But then they say, you know, if a priest walked in and he was unclean, what happened to him, Mike? What would they tell you? What'd that say? Hey, if we'll just listen to what the book says, forget about what people say, man, it changes everything, don't it? God never held these people accountable. He said they're blameless. They're innocent, what the language literally says. Isn't that amazing? I think that's truly amazing. I've read this a whole bunch of times, but I've never seen it before. I believe the same thing everybody told me out of that religious garbage. Here, he said they're blameless. Where? Or have you not read how that on the Sabbath days, the priests of the temple, that's the literal temple, they desecrated the Sabbath and are blameless. They're innocent. They're not held guilty for that. God needed those examples, did he not? Just like Judas Iscariot. Do you think God held him guilty above anybody else? He knew who he was. He said, I chose him as a devil, but I chose him. He chose him to do what he needed to be done. Okay? So what kind of a mind do you think Jesus has here? He's speaking to these religious Pharisees. And a lot of times we get caught up in this thing about Jesus. And, oh, he's so nice and he's so sweet. But, you know, he got fed up with religious folk. What did he call them? Hypocrites, vipers, serpents, snakes. Does that make any of you happy if someone call you them things? Those religious Pharisees knew what he was talking about. He knew they were hypocrites. He knew they had the nature of a serpent. See? We have to realize sometimes we have to say what needs to be said regardless. Do you think Jesus was trying to provoke the Pharisees into crucifying him? He knew what they was going to do to him. He knew when he was a little boy what was going to be in his life. That's what we have to come to. We have to come to the place where we know, like we said when we started, this mind of Christ. We have to know who we are, our identity. We have to know our Father. That's our relationship with Him. We have to know our purpose. That's our destiny. And we have to know His will from our will. If we know them things, what would we be anxious about? Nothing. We know what's going to happen. That's how he could constantly say when they started to threaten him, he says, it's not yet my time. It's not yet my time. Can't do nothing yet. He was causing earthquakes. You can bet on that. Right between their ears. Out of what he was doing, there were some that were being refined. The scripture says there's life and death in what? So as he spoke, he has to know, and as a son of God speaking the word of God, you've got to know that when you speak to some, you're speaking life, and the same words are bringing death to others. That's the word. I didn't write it, did I? But I can't change it either, can I? See? Some people will hear the word, and it'll just take them right off back into oblivion. And others will hear the truth and come to life. See? That's what God has meant it to be. Sharper than a two-edged sword, dividing, piercing asunder, separating. And that's what he's trying to teach them here. But I say unto you, verse 6, that in this place is one greater than that literal temple. That's what it should say. It's the word Hieron. It's the literal temple. He said there's one greater than this building. And see, the Jews thought that big building built out of stone and marble and gold and all their fancy stuff. They thought that was the greatest thing in the world. And he's saying, there's one standing here that's greater, and they didn't even hear him. They didn't even hear him. That's right. That's right. Because they were condemning everybody. But verse 7, he says, but if you had known what this means, I will have, or I literally desire, compassion. Where it says, I will have mercy. Literally should say, I desire compassion. And not sacrifice. You would not have what? Literally the language says, pronounce guilty the innocent. See? The Pharisees did not mind judging someone guilty as long as their reputation wasn't stained. In fact, they would gladly judge someone to make them look good. Didn't they do it to Jesus? See? To keep their reputation intact? They tried to destroy him and get rid of him any way possible just to get him out of their face because he was revealing all their flaws, every one of them. And all he did was spoke truth. Verse 8, because the Son of Humanity is Lord also of the Sabbath day. See, they thought the Sabbath day was something that no one could touch. But he's trying to tell them, there is one standing here greater than the Sabbath day. And that is God, the one who created everything. See, he's Lord even on the Sabbath. And they thought, well, nothing's greater than the Sabbath. And that's what happens to us in religion. We get to look at things. We look at our church building. We look at our Bible as a book and say this book is holy and righteous. This is nothing but a tree that's been cut down and processed and chopped up and smeared out flat and got ink printed on it. And they killed a cow and put it around this one. True or false? But the Spirit of God in here, in this Word, there's a Spirit of God in this. That's what's holy. Nothing else on the face of this earth is holy. It's only His Spirit. The only thing that's holy is the Spirit of God. Nothing else is holy. But we have to watch, because we'll do the same thing that these Pharisees did in those days. They set this stuff up and made these instruments to be so holy, these places to be so holy. We can't have that. And when he was departed there, he went into their synagogue. Notice he didn't claim it, did he? He said, it's their synagogue. That's right, it wasn't his. What God started out under the law, by the time this came about, it's about 4,000 years, do you think it's anything like it was when it started? See? When God set it up, it was very simple. And he was talking spiritually back then as much as he was at that time, and he is now. God is spirit. He seeks those to worship him in spirit and truth. So if we're going to hear God or worship God, how are we going to do it? In spirit, see? Clear back in Deuteronomy, Moses wrote and said, if you want to please God, circumcise the foreskin of your heart. Now that isn't a natural Jew, is it? That's a spiritual Jew from the very beginning. That's what he was after. But nobody wants to see that. He's always after it. Then Deuteronomy 10:16, it's in Jeremiah 4 and 4 and about two or three other places where he talked about the spiritual Jew clear back there in the Old Testament. Absolutely. No, because they'd already set up in their mind.
That would be very confusing to them.
Well, it's very unsettling at the very least. It's very unsettling because they were trained. It's just like today, if we, like, we'll say Catholicism, they take their little kids this big and they start them in catechism and they just keep training them and training them and training them. And when they get up this big, you couldn't break that skull with a sledgehammer, could you? Because they brainwash them. It's no different under the Judaism. They brainwashed them. You know, they just drove it in them, and they kept them under so much fear and control that they were afraid to even think anything different than what the Pharisees spoke. See? And that's religion. We have to have the liberty to stretch our minds the way God has given us a mind to use.
That's why there's so many people that are fearful now.
Of the truth.
Yeah,
it's no different.
Something new.
Right. It's not really new,
no.
But they have never heard it or saw it before, so it's new to them. Where it said that they were not guilty for all these things, see? They were blameless. And it says it right there, but yet they still teach that they were all guilty and, you know, it's wrong. But it's what they've been taught. And if you've been taught something by your parents and people you trust, it's hard to rock that one out of somebody. Now, it's hard. And Jesus is just revealing it's no different. The same thing coming to us. And when he had departed out there into their synagogue, he said, and behold, there was a man which had his hand withered, and they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath days? And now it says, in order that they might accuse him. Well, he knew what they were doing. He wasn't ignorant. Now, you'd have thought, well, today, rather than stir up the religious folk, and this is what they'll try to tell you, now don't rock the boat. Jesus could have said, hey, come on with me, we'll go out and take a walk, nobody will be around, I'll fix your hand up, and everything's okay, won't you? Did he do that? He did it right in front of them. See? There's a time, and this is what we have to understand, there's a time of confrontation. I've said it, I don't know how many times here. Confrontation is healthy. It's healthy. No confrontation is not healthy. See, if we just go with the flow of what anything wants, that's not healthy. Because that's not what's in your heart, is it? You've got to get out of your heart what's in your heart. If it's the wrong thing, get it out. If it's the right thing, expose it so I know it's right. Would you understand that? So he didn't try to get away from anything. So what do you think's in his mind? Father, you sent me down here, and you're making me run head on into this religious tradition. It's harder than a piece of granite that's set in these religious people's minds. And you won't let me just come down here and be the sacrifice. You've got to make me walk in amongst them and stir them up like a bunch of hornets every time I walk through them. Imagine that.
I say, Jesus didn't have no easy walk. He could have come down here and just said, nail me to the cross, let's get it over with. No, he had to walk 3.5 years as the Son of God, the mature Son of God, filled with the Spirit, and confronting these people all the time. Now, who wants to do that today? Nobody in their human mind. It'd be stupid to want to do it. But does that mean it's not going to be done? It's got to be done. See, there's a time of confrontation. And this is what we have to see in his mind. He never did what he wanted to do. He did what he was told to do. See? We have to learn there's a time of boldness and there's a time to not be bold. Just to step back and let it go. And we have to learn by God's Spirit how to do that. There's no school you can go to. There's no formula you can attain to or any prerequisite that you can do to make you understand, say, well, this is what I can do. I can't put it on a little card and carry it in my pocket when something comes up, say, whoop, no, I see, I should be on B and not C. Okay, back up. You can't do that. You've got to be sensitive to hear God's Spirit in your life every day. Every day. There's no time off. It's just with him all the time. So he goes in verse 11, and he said unto them, or but should be but he said unto them, what man shall there be among you or from out of among you that shall have one sheep and it fall into a pit on the Sabbath day? Will he not lay hold of it and lift it out? He's putting it right back on them. Is that confrontation? They said he wasn't supposed to even pick a grain of wheat off the top of it, a head of wheat, and eat that to keep alive. And he's saying, wouldn't you pick up your sheep if it was the only sheep you had? Sure. And they don't like it because he's confronting them publicly. And he said, verse 12, how much then is a man or humanity, it's the word anthropos, how much better then is humanity than a sheep? Is there any comparison? He said we're much better than sparrows, we're better than sheep. See? And if we'll treat our animals, and today, believe me, people are hung up in animals. I mean, they're saving the planet. What did I hear the other night? Oh, I know that millionaire thing. And all these people were playing to make money, you know, for charities. I don't know how many of them there was. They was all handing out checks to them to give to their charities. And they had raised over $500,000. And nearly all, I might say 90% of the people that was playing there for charity, you know what they gave their money to? Save the planet and save the animals. Animals are a renewable resource on this planet. They reproduce. They were put here for a reason. And they were really getting on this one guy because he had a piece of fur on his clothes. I mean, you know, it's nuts. When God took Adam and Eve in the garden after the sin happened, what did God do? Animal skins. Come on. They'd crucify God today, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they? About an animal skin. See? It's ridiculous what people think, but we have got to come against that mindset. Doesn't mean we don't like our animals, but they're not human, are they? If it comes down to it, humans come first. Any human over any animal. See? And people don't understand it. We have to confront this thing in ourselves as much as anybody else. See? It's not just confront out there, it's confront in here. We've had some pets that I dearly love, but hey, they're not humans. Any human is above them for that reason, because they're just an animal. As much as we like to make them part of our family, they're pets, and they're not people. So he says, wherefore is it lawful, or literally right, to do, he said, therefore is it right to do good on the Sabbath day? Is it right to do good on the Sabbath day? Sure it is. Sure it is. What is the Sabbath day supposed to be, an evil day? Come on. It was made for man. Man wasn't made for the Sabbath. Sabbath was made for us. See? So that doesn't make it a holy day like they thought. It was a time when they were just setting up a pattern of how to worship, and it was a shadow and type of what was to come into reality when Christ was manifested in humanity. That's all. And then he said to the man, stretch forth your hand or extend your hand out. And he stretched it forth and it was what? He put it back just like it was.
He restored it. It had been natural, but something had happened to it. Because if it was withered, if he was born like this with a withered hand, it had never been like this, had it? So evidently something happened to that man's hand as he was going through life that messed his hand up. And it had to be restored. It's like this. You can't paint, you can't repaint this wall if it hasn't been painted, could you? So his hand had to be natural, and he lost use of it, and God restored it back whole. That means it's just like it was before. And then the Pharisees went out and held counsel against him. Oh my. As soon as you start doing things violating their laws, what are they going to do? They'll have counsel against you. They'll start taking counsel of what they, how they might do what?
Destroy.
Well, that word doesn't just say destroy. If you look in the language, it says fully destroy. They want to remove every trace of him, see, because he's getting too much attention. It's not healthy for anybody to get the attention except the leaders. I've heard that one on occasion. Not healthy for someone else in the body to get attention. It's all supposed to be for the pastor. That's what I heard. Didn't believe it then, and still don't believe it. Okay. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew himself from thence, and great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all. And he charged them, the word charge literally is he forbid them that they should not, that they should not make him known. They should not make him known. What's it telling you about him? He doesn't want any attention. See? He was doing what the Father told him. All this attention gets in the way of you accomplishing what you got to do. Now, I don't think Jesus for one second, I don't think with the mind he had, I don't think for one second that I ever saw him or ever thought of him or he ever thought of himself getting in a trap and getting in pride. I don't believe that for one second, do you? I don't believe he was ever in danger of being in pride because people were wanting to attract to him for what he did. But with so much going on, he could not accomplish what he had to do. There was things he had to do. He had to go from place to place and do what the Father told him to do. And with those great multitudes around him, he couldn't do it. So he didn't need the advertising, did he? I talked with that girl today. We was at a restaurant. And she says, "Where's your church at?" And I said, "West Porchman." "What's the name of it?" And I told her. And she said, "Well, I don't believe I've ever heard that." And I said, "Well, it's not advertised. How would you?" So I said, "I'm not looking for a big crowd. If anybody's supposed to be there, God will bring them. I don't have to go out and beat the bushes and try to get somebody to come here, do I?" See? Well, God wants to be here, they will come. Jesus never sent flyers out, and he never went out knocking on doors, did he? See? It's all about letting the Spirit of God run the show and not us trying to figure out how to do things. And I read 16, 17 has to go right with it. In order that, the word that, there's he, it should be in order that it be fulfilled, not might, the word might shouldn't be there, in order that it be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah, which is really who? Isaiah, the prophet, right? And the word by there should be through, it's dia. So he was spoken through the Isaiah the prophet, saying, "Behold my servant whom I have chosen." The word servant there literally is child. This, "Behold my child whom I have chosen." Okay? Now, this was who? What was Isaiah? Who was Isaiah speaking of? Okay. If he's speaking of Jesus, and Jesus was also the who? The Christ. Okay. He's Christ, right? Now, is he the only Christ? I'm not talking about multiple Christs. There's only one Christ, but how many people make up Christ? See, a many-membered body, right? So when he's saying, it was as it was prophesied by and spoken by Isaiah, he says, "My servant," or "my child," or "my son, whom I have" what? "I have chosen." What'd you have to do with it? See? This is something that God has done, and the church world just can't grasp this thing.
It's not about us making a decision for Jesus. It's about understanding that God has spoken our heart. Believe me, I did not choose what I'm doing. I have tried to get away from it. I went to churches, and I swear people didn't even know me, and before you know it, I'd be up in the front of the church. I don't know. You know, I couldn't get away from it. God won't let me, so I have to do what I'm told. So just like Jonah ran to the whale for 3 days, went to the ocean, whatever, and got eaten by a whale, I couldn't get away from it, so I said, might as well give in. I didn't have to be thrown in the river. I give up earlier. I saw I couldn't win anyway. Where am I at now? Oh, 18. My beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased, I will put my spirit upon him, and he shall show what? Judgment to the Gentiles or to the nations. Literally, what does that tell you in this verse? What do you see in here? What do you see in there? Huh? Well, I'm talking about over the whole thing, not just one word. Look, I see what you're saying, but I'm not talking about that. He says, so I'm looking at the whole thing. What does that verse bring you to? Jeremiah 31, 31 through 33. The new covenant. See, well, who's doing everything in that verse? God is doing it. And see, it's just showing you there's a covenant. And Jesus saying, what Isaiah said, I will do everything, won't he? I will put my spirit upon him and he will show judgment. The word judgment here is crisis. It's where we get our English word crisis from. It's a transliterated word. It means crisis. And I will show crisis, what we call judgment, unto the nations. He shall not what? Literally, he shall not wrestle. Okay? He shall not wrestle. I need to look at a verse that I got written down here. Okay. This comes out of Isaiah 42, this section of Scripture Jesus is quoting here. I'm going to read Isaiah 42, and I'll start with verse 1 and read down where Jesus is talking about. Behold my servant, whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. That sound familiar? He shall not cry, nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, the smoking flax shall he not quench. He shall bring forth judgment unto truth. He shall not fail nor be discouraged till he has set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law. Does that sound familiar? Same thing Jesus just quoted. He just quoted Isaiah. He shall not strive, verse 19, that's wrestle, nor cry or cry out. Neither shall any man hear his voice in the what? Streets, wrong word. Square. The plateia is the Greek word. And it means the open square. Where did they do all their business in those cities in that day? In the center of the city, they had a place, a big open place they called the square. And that was because it was what shape? Big square. But the Greek word is plateia. The same thing we use today in our surveying of land, they call it a plat. When they survey a piece of ground, they call it a plat. You know, she's on a big piece of paper that's square. Okay? So, same thing when you read in the book of Revelation. We've already touched this before. I'll say it again. When it talks about the streets of gold, there is no streets. It's the same word right here, plateia. It's that square, the center where everything is, it's the center of attention in the city. A bruised reed shall he not break, and a smoking flax, and literally a smoking flax, it's the word linen, shouldn't be flax, shall he not quench. That's like a wick on a lamp or something. Shall he not quench till, now he didn't say he was not going to do it, he said he wasn't going to do it until, did he? See, until he send forth crisis unto victory. The word judgment is crisis. So he send forth crisis. Do you ever feel like you're in crisis? You ever been in crisis? See? But this crisis brings forth what? What's it bring forth? He told you right there. It brings forth victory in your life. See, if we learn to accept the crisis that comes into our lives every day, we won't fight this thing. We will accept God's hand in our lives. And I appreciate when I talked to Ed yesterday, when he called me, when he come back, he said, he went up there and everything went good and he wasn't excited. And he went in there and he said, well, he told his daughter, he said, well, it's in God's hands. What can I do about it? See, and that's the attitude we got to have with life. Everything. What can I do to change it? I can either obey God or disobey God. If I disobey, I already know what's going to happen. And if I obey God, guess what? I know what's going to happen there too. See? So what's the big deal? I just have to let God be God. Just let him be. And then we can be who we be. Right? And in his name shall the Gentiles trust. Right? In his what? In his anoma, the nature and character, his authority, they will trust. See? Not in the name Jesus. There's no magic in those letters. But in the nature and the character of the man called Jesus, which was the nature and the character of our Father, right? Called the Christ. There's what the nature and character is about. Not about this Jesus, because I guarantee you when Jesus walked on the earth, it was a common name. There was a lot of people called Jesus. But this was a specific man who was filled with the Spirit of God. That was the Christ. It's never about the humanity of Jesus. It was about the Spirit of God that was in that humanity. The same thing with us. We get caught up in thinking it's just about the flesh man Jesus. Well, I can tell you this with complete confidence, 100%. You will never see that man Jesus, the long-haired, blue-eyed thing they got in the pictures. You'll never see that. You'll never see that one-man Jesus again. I don't care what anybody says. You won't see that. Because it's about the many-membered Christ. And this Christ was created in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 through 3, right? And that was created before anything else was created, so it's already here. And all you got to see when Jesus walked on this earth was the first of many brethren. He was the first of many brethren manifested in the earth. And now there are many more brethren being manifested. Okay, just the first one. And you know, I don't take nothing away from him. I don't discredit anything he did. But he was the first of many of us. Do you understand what I'm saying? There's many more just like him. Doesn't the book say when he is manifested, we'll be just like him? Well, then why can't we think we're just like him? If the book says we're supposed to be, why can't we be? Again, it goes right back to what we're talking about, the mind of Christ. If I have the mind of Christ, what will I think I'm like? Right? See, I'll think I am who I am. But if I am Christ and I think I'm not, we got a little duality working here, haven't we? And guess what? I'll never be what I'm supposed to be. I've got to have my mind fixed first. My mind has to come to the place where I understand I am the Christ. And that's not knocking anything about Jesus. When Jesus said he was Christ, the Christ, the Son of the living God, what did they try to do with him? When he said, I am the Son of God, what did they do? They wanted to kill him. You think it's any different today? Now, you can talk to some people and say, well, I'm the Christ, part of the Christ. They say, well, maybe. But they don't really believe that you have the same power and authority that Jesus walked in. They say, well, you're a stepchild or half-brother or something like that. But you can't be a full-blood brother with him. That's in their head. See? Because I know better. See? Benjamin was a full-blood brother. He had full-blood brothers that had full power and authority of their father. See? We got the same thing. But if you don't believe it, you'll never walk in that power and authority, will you? You got to know it. I'm just trying to encourage you and let you know you are what he's made you to be. You don't got to become something. You already are. You just got to believe what he's already done for you. To those he foreknew, he predestined what? Conformed to the image of his son. They ain't got to be conformed. When a son, Mike, when you had your first son born, you had your son born. When was he your son? No, when he was conceived. Did he have to become your son? At instant of conception, he was your son. See? The instant that we're born again, what are we? Sons. Are you born again? What are you? We're sons. See? It's so simple, but religion has made it so difficult we can't get through all the confusion. Just kick it off and listen to what God says and forget about all that other stuff. Okay? No. I don't believe that for a minute. I said, I have let some things go, but I'll take control of it again. I refuse it. I refuse to accept any of those diagnoses. I just refuse to accept it. But I got to do something about it. I can't just ignore it. You know, I got some responsibility. You know, I can reap what I've sown. If I've mistreated my body, I've got to reap that, don't I? See, I've done some things to my body by not eating right, not getting the exercise. You know, there was reasons why from injuries, but I've got to go through that now. I can't play with that no more. I've been too lax with everything, and I just can't do it anymore. And everybody's got to walk through what God's put in their life for them to deal with. Okay? So don't feel condemnation about that. I'm just saying that people put diseases on people, and sometimes we put them on ourselves. There's a lot of things, the mind can do a lot of things to us. It can really hurt us. Not meant to bring any condemnation on anybody. When this man was healed and he spoke and saw, and all the people were amazed and said, "Is not this the son of David?" What does it take to get people to look at you? Signs and wonders. And that's not what it's about. He didn't do this for that reason. But when the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This fellow does not cast out devils, but by Beelzebub, the prince of devils." First thing they do, when you start stealing a little bit of their limelight, what are they going to do? They're going to jump on you and slander you. You've got to be working with witchcraft. You've got to be in the demonic influence, you know. And said unto them, "Every kingdom that's divided," and this word divided literally means disunited. Something can't be disunited unless it's been united, right? So separation has come. This word disunited literally means, along with disunited, means split into factions. Split into factions or pieces. Okay? Doesn't that sound like our lives today and our churches today? We're supposed to be being put back together, absolutely. In Matthew 5:18, do you remember the passage where I spoke when we was in Matthew 5 where it said, "Until heaven and earth pass, not one jot or tittle shall pass from the law." Or the law, is that what it says? Something similar. Let me quote it correctly. I don't want to misquote it. Okay? "For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled." Okay. You remember how I explained that? Do anybody remember? Until the concept of heaven and earth being what? Separated is done away with. When Jesus came, what did he do? He restored us back to where we were with God. So guess what? God's no longer up there and we're not down here. We're what? We're one with him. We're united, see? And that's what he's trying to tell these religious folk here, that every kingdom that's divided against itself is brought to desolation, right? And every city or house divided against itself shall not stand. He's trying to tell them, you are fighting against the one that's bringing you back together. You're arguing with the one. Sure they will. Now, can you imagine, think what's in our minds, how hard it would be to stand and argue with someone, and he's not arguing, he's just telling them the truth. He's telling them the truth. He knows who he is. And they think he's crazy, don't they? They say he's full of devils. And he's trying to tell them, "Hey, I'm trying to tell you the right way," and they're standing there fussing with him. How hard would it be for you to talk to somebody like that, knowing that they don't believe a thing you say and you created them? What would you think would be in your mind? Why don't I just kick that and out and start over again? Well, I get one just not so hard-headed, you know. But see, he didn't do that. Get back, let me just wipe them out.
Yeah,
sure.
That's
trying to say, no.
No.
See? But that wasn't in his heart, ever, to destroy. He said he repented himself that he ever made him, made man. But that's not what he was trying to say. He said, no, wait a minute. Probably the hard head he didn't want to deal with. But he loved them. And he loved them enough, he knew how they were. He created them. So he wasn't mad. And in Jesus' heart at that time, what do you think's in his heart? What did he say earlier? If you had known what this meant, I desire compassion. What do you think's in his heart? The compassion and the love to put up with them when they're standing there arguing with the truth. Don't you realize what we got to do? We're going to stand here and argue with people. We're going to be telling them the truth, and they're going to stand here and argue with us. And if anything other than compassion is in our heart and mercy for their lack of understanding, you know who's got the problem? We do. If we can't have compassion and mercy for the ones who do not understand, doesn't mean you give them everything, but you have mercy and compassion for them. Right? There you go. Just go ahead and accept them. It's okay. All right? And if Satan cast out Satan, he is divided against himself, how shall then his kingdom stand? Now this word Satan here, what does it mean? Anybody know? The accuser. Okay? It comes from a Hebrew word that means the adversary. Okay? Let me turn to a chapter in the Old Testament and see what I've got a scripture written down here in Chronicles. First Chronicles, chapter 21. And it says here, let me read this to you. And Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And David said to Joab, the rulers of the people, go number Israel from Beersheba even to Dan and bring the number of them to me that I may know it. Now, the same root word for that back there, that Hebrew word, comes out of this Greek word right here for Satanas. It's a root word out of it. Same thing, accuser. Do you think that there was a person that the humanity today walk on earth calls the devil, a personality of a person that was talking to David to inspire him to go do the wrong thing? What do you think was talking to him? Absolutely, it was his mind. The church wants to think that that's a devil with a red flannel suit and horns and a pitchfork, and don't forget the pointed tail. See, I have the pointed tail. But this thing between our ears. What does the natural man do? It says Satan stood up there in 1 Chronicles 21, didn't it? What's that mean? Stood up. See? What word would we go along with that? Ego, pride, self. See? David's ego is what got in his way. David had accomplished so much, he figured he was invincible. And what God will do in his blessing to you when you step outside of those boundaries, when you say, I can just do it all within myself now. Who needs God? Man, I've got her now. I've got her socked in the bank and good job, and he blow on and it's gone. Can he? See? We got to come to a place where we realize I can do nothing without him. And Jesus said that, didn't he? You can do nothing without me. You think he was being prideful? He knew who he was. Absolutely not. Some people might act like the devil, and some people might be full of all kinds of devils. But there is no devil, a personality, a deity like the church has made him out to be,
well,
equal with God.
Friday night, that preacher acted like a devil.
That's a lie.
No.
That's a lie. It's not a person. Never has this accuser been there. If it's all about being internal, and is God an internal God? Okay. Then the accuser has to accuse me internally. See? The battle's within. It's not without. Everything's within in my thinking process. And the accuser that Jesus faced, this devil that Jesus faced in the wilderness, was the same thing that we face every day in our wilderness. The book says Jesus was tempted in every way as we are. I ain't got nobody with a pitchfork running around poking me in the butt telling me what to do. But I got this thing between my ears that's talking to me every day. I hear him talk to me constantly. Yeah. Well, sure, point on, it's no responsibility. Put it on somebody. See, if I accept the responsibility for the decisions I make, I can't even blame it on that piece of gray meat between my ears that they call a brain. Because if I blame it on that, it's still me copping out to my responsibility. I've had stupid things come to me. I'll share one time. This friend of mine, we was going to his house, and when we get to his house, there's a bridge. And he's got a gate across the road on a bridge. And I pulled up behind him right there, and as I was sitting there waiting for him to unlock the gate, because he was driving through right in front of me, this thing come ahead and said, "Won't you just plow him right in the rear and see if he just push your truck and his road right through that gate?" See? I mean, stupid stuff. And every one of us hear that stuff in our heads every day. That's the devil. That's the accuser. That's the one that tells you you're not worthy. You're not really a son of God. You're guilty. You're a sinful person. True or false? See, that's what we hear. That's what the devil is. But see, the church has made him into a deity, a personality. No place in this book is he a personality. It's what someone has made him into. And I'm sorry, there's only one boss in this world. His name is not Antichrist, his name is Christ. Period.
Well, when it said in the Bible, it says in the Revelation, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know we're talking about what? It's spiritual. It's not literal. We're talking about a spiritual thing. I know you've got that tape because I made it for you. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. And when you realize that these are spiritual things, when it says that the serpent was, or the dragon was cast out of heaven, the dragon being the serpent, okay? What does heaven represent? Spirit, see? And he was cast out of the spirit to the earth, back to the flesh realm. See? He got no control over us. Doesn't the covenant say that as long as the serpent, what the serpent's food is, rather, is the dust? And as long as we stay in the dust realm or the sand realm that's on the earth and the serpent has food to eat on. But when we ascend into the heavenlies, he can't get there. See? That's the thing, Bill. People don't understand. They're trying to make this devil something literal instead of who it really is. If God's a spirit, what's he caring about all the literal stuff? That's just a smokescreen. Just something to confuse us and not let us go on with our lives. We've got to grow up and quit playing with this stuff that's not real. Okay? So if the accuser cast out the accuser, he is divided against himself. How shall his kingdom stand? See? See, if I'm wrestling with myself all the time, I'm in an unstable place, aren't I? That's why he's telling you. And that's what's going on in their head. See, they're wrestling with themselves. And if I, by Beelzebub, the word Beelzebub there, if I'm not mistaken, means Lord of the Flies or Lord of the Dung Heap. Okay, that's what it means. By whom do your children cast them out? Whoa. What's he doing to them? He's saying, if I'm cast them out by some devil, the Lord of the Dung Pile, then what's your boys doing it with? How's your boys doing it? Because see, their kids were doing the same thing. The other Pharisees, they were doing deliverance on people. Probably doing more damage than it was good, but they were doing it. Yep. And he said, therefore, or through this, or through that thing, They will be your judges. They will be your judges. But if I cast out devils by the Spirit of God, then the kingdom of come. What, the kingdom of God is what? Literally, the language says has come. The kingdom of God has come to you. Not is going to come. It's already come. See? And he's telling you, if I'm casting out by the Spirit of God, what's he saying within him then? Do you know how happy that made the Pharisees? Saying, God's in here. And oh, he made them mad. Oh, he made them mad. Or else, how can one enter into a strong man's house and spoil or seize his goods? The words aren't right here. And spoil literally is seize his what? Vessel is what it says. How, the word goods is literally a vessel. What are we? How are you going to go into a strong man and take his vessel? He's not talking about a clay pot. What's he talking about? This thing, the vessel that contains it all. So he says, except he first bind the strong man, and then he will plunder his house. See? You got to bind the strong man. Who's he talking about? The strong man. The natural man. See, the natural man here. That's the one that has to be plundered before I can take the house. Right? They can't get to it. I can't go into my house, and this is my house, and take control of this vessel until I have overcome the strong man, or the one who thinks he's strong. How's that? The one who thinks he's in control, the one who thinks he's strong, that ego man. Okay? So I can't take the house until I've done that. He that is not what? What's the word? He that is not what? Literally it says, it's the Greek word meta, in the midst of me. He that is not in the midst of me is against me. You could say, he that's not in me is against me, couldn't you? And he that gathers not in the midst of me does what? Scatters abroad. So if I'm not in him and I'm not gathering in the midst of him or in the middle of him or with him, guess what? I'm scattering abroad. Huh? If I don't stop, I'm not going to get done. I'm going to go through this tonight. It's going on 9 o'clock. Maybe I should let it stop here. Well, we're in what verse? 30? We start with 31? Mm-hmm. Let me drop off there and we'll get... Because we're getting into a good concept here. Some other things coming about the things that's going on in his mind. And if I try to go on, I'm going to open up something. It'll keep me going for a long time. And I can go all night. Don't bother me, but I know everybody else got jobs to do and things like that. So